Thank you very much, Alan. Thanks for the invitation to come and talk today at the AGM. Alan gave me this title, The Value of Architecture and Architects. And somehow it seems a little sloganeering. It seems like a kind of a sales pitch, you know, and I feel a bit uncomfortable about that. I don't like that use of value. That's not something that appeals to me. And picking up just where Eleanor was finishing off, you know, where, what sort of society do we want? What sort of values are we espousing? I mean, I think the best architects in Ireland are now valued. Clearly we saw the evidence here in this building. It's not just in Ireland, but they're valued abroad as well. And they're valued because they're doing something special, I think. They're valued because other societies are starting to see that they represent something. They represent a set of values. And it's values rather than value that I would like to talk about, because I think that's the core to whether, as a profession, we have a successful future or a marginal future. It's about the core values that we represent and that we can deliver in a unique way for the society in which we live. And we live in a busted society. I mean, let's face facts. This was an image prepared for the Biennale, the Irish entry for the Biennale in Venice in 2006, only 6 years ago, when it was, the theme was chosen by FKL Architects, suburban to super rural. When we knew we were on the wrong road. We knew we were on the wrong road as a society because we kept electing politicians who told us what we wanted to hear, even though we knew we were on the road to ruin. We all knew it as a society, and now we can see it in the rearview mirror at what was left behind us. In the Venice Biennale 20 years ago, Hans Holein was the director of the Biennale. And he said as the theme for that Biennale in 1991, the architect as seismograph. And it was an interesting sort of a title because he was saying in a way that architecture kind of in a way can measure the tremors in society, can measure what's going on deep down. And so Alan asked me if I could stand back a little bit from what has happened and see if there was a way that I could be a kind of a seismograph. Could I see some trends or some overall pictures that might have emerged? And this was prompted, I responded to him by saying, well, look, what I'll do is I'll base it on an exhibition that I curated in Leuven in the Museum M in Belgium last year at the request of an organization in Leuven called Stad en Architectuur, which means city and architecture, who had developed an interest in Ireland. They thought there were lessons that could be learned from Ireland in Flanders, in particular. They had started to invite architects. They had invited graphic architects to speak. They had invited Lloyd Cody to speak. And they had invited O'Donnell Toomey to speak. And on the back of that, 60 mid-career Flemish architects decided to come to Ireland and travel around for 5 days to see what they could learn. And after that, they said, actually, we want to show what's happening in Ireland, in Flanders. We want to show it to more people. Because there are similarities of scale, there are similarities of issues about high individual house ownership, similar market relationships. So they came to the AAI, the Architectural Association of Ireland, and they said, can you mount an exhibition of architecture of the first 10 years of this century, 2000 to 2010? And so the AI said, yeah, well, we run an award scheme. And so, you know, we can make a selection from the award scheme. And they said, well, we don't want a best of the best. We don't want actually that. We don't want a straightforward catalog. We'd like you, if you could in some way, look deeper into what came up through your award scheme and see, are there any narratives? Are there any tales? Are there any stories? And so I was asked to come in with the Belgians and the AAI, and to kind of make a personal selection out of whatever there were. It was 10 years' work, so I guess there was several hundred schemes. The gallery had a limit on 40 projects that could be shown, so that was a fix. And after that, it was what to do. And because of the 40 and the way the designer was kind of thinking about it, it looked like 8 5s. 4 10s, you know, something like that might work as a kind of a breakdown. And anyway, I came up with eight themes. I identified eight themes. Others could identify other themes. So this is not definitive. But I think it is real. And the Belgians had said, you know, Ireland is in crisis. It has gone through a boom period. It's in crisis now. Are there, and they asked in particular, are there any social lessons that can be learned that might help to rebuild the society in the coming decades as things pick up and improve? So there was a social aspect to it that they asked. But as I was looking through the awards over the years, one thing that really surprised the hell out of me, I hadn't expected it at all. If you consider the size of the construction market, the size of the architectural market over that period, what became evident to me very quickly was that most of the schemes, irrespective of whether I liked ones or not, or whether they told a particular story or didn't tell a story, most of the schemes that had succeeded over the years, in the old days I would have put them, you know, I would have divided projects as between public projects or private projects, public sector, private sector. It was more interesting to consider projects that were for profit and projects that were not for profit. So you can have lots of projects that are in the private sector that are not for profit. So it's not the old-fashioned split between public and private, but it's very interesting because about 95% of all the projects in the field, in the pot, not just in what I selected, were not for profit. And it's very interesting to reflect on that if you want to talk about real values that are represented through award schemes. So as a profession, with all of its members operating, those are the ones we tend to pull through to the top. So like hospital design, for example, schools, they're all not-for-profit. It was interesting. I suppose it brings me, just before I kick into what the eight, I've admitted, an edited version of the 40, there's only 24 here, but I've kept the eight themes. But nearly 40 years ago, my best friend, Michael de Courcy, the late husband of Yvonne Farrell of Grafton Architects, when we were students, stood up in class one day and he said, architecture is a political act. And by that, what he meant was, it is a built value system. And that's what you're dealing with as architects, and as it's how you are judged by society. So the first one, I gave the title The Face of Democracy, and it has to do with a building program, north and south, over the last decade or so, primarily for local government. There has been a revolution in buildings for local government. And I think it's very important that these democratic institutions are there, particularly as, in large parts of our society, organized religion plays less and less of a binding part in society. It is actually democratic functions that will hold our society together in the coming decades, it would appear. Two general themes, I suppose, emerged from this. One has to do with timelessness. Architects tend to like to make buildings with as few materials as possible, and also if they can build in eternity into them, they like that too. But there is an alternative strain at work in Ireland, which has to do with giving expression to the engineering aspects of passive solar, passive architecture, passive engineering aspects, dealing with things like solar glare, excessive heating in buildings, cooling of natural ventilation and cooling of workplaces, as if there's a kind of a moral or ethical additional bonus to these aspects that's worthy of expression. It is particularly interesting to note that certainly in the Republic of Ireland that it was impossible to deliver through the market naturally ventilated office buildings in 2000. And even if architects wanted to design them, they couldn't, because the estate agents who were in at the first end of the brief advising developers would say, you can't let them on the market. There is no market for them. They're unproven. They will only be able to let what let last year or what let last month with a tiny add-on. But you make a radical change and no chance at all. It was the local authorities who bit the bullet. And who chanced this and did it in Fingal with Buchholz McAvoy and in other buildings with other architects afterwards. And within 6 or 7 years, the private sector had followed suit. What, I mean, there's this whole kind of mantra that went on during this mad period: private good, public bad. You know, private is the innovator. You know, the public is the waster. In architecture, it's untrue. The public sector can and often is the innovator, and when it shows that it works, the private sector can follow behind, if the lessons are clearly explained. So just three buildings by FKL at Baldoyle, a small village on the north part of Dublin City, and a very small building which was there's a meeting room on the top, there's a small exhibition space below, there's several offices for the local councillors, 4 or 5 local councillors in this sub-district, and then there's the old library building beside it, which has been reconfigured. And in a way, it's the second end of this small village. There's the church at the far end, and this new public institution defines Baldoyle, the extent of Baldoyle, so it's one end of it. But again, it's stone, traditional materials. The architects had never designed a public building before, and they were commissioned by interview by the county architect. He interviewed 4 architects, young architects, would look after them and let them go. That's how they got the job. The public meeting room, the meeting room on the top, is where the local councillors meet. When they're not meeting, it's available to the community and it focuses out on the local landmark out to sea. Similar ideas in County Meath and Dunshaughlin, an early building by Grafton Architects, again one by interview, and the first of their buildings to be shortlisted for the Mies van der Rohe Award for European architecture. The ideas are very simple. If this is a civic building, it has a civic ground in front of it, which is made of stone. It's made of granite, and it has a public canopy or porte cochere in front of it. The trees on the right-hand side are kept on the site. The building is very small, and the council chamber, which again is for 6 or 8 local area, this at sub-county level, local area councillors, that's pulled out into a glass box in front of the building, so that the democratic aspect of the building is given public representation. And larger scale, Buckles McAvoy's second building, Dura Doyle, which is for Limerick County Council headquarters, a long building, which is a street which connects a library at one end with a shopping centre at the other end, and all the services are accessed off the street. A difficult site with the orientation, and so this lattice screen of solar shading was developed in front of the building. Urban acupuncture. Sometime in the late 1980s or so, cities suddenly realized that they were in competition with the suburbs, that they had to change from places of production, which they were increasingly not, they were losing, if they were to compete with the suburbs. They were losing shopping to suburban shopping. They had to compete with each other. And I think what they realized was that maybe one way to do this was that cities should be managed like large theaters, that it needed to become a stage, a performance space for civic life, that the public realm had to be managed and it had to be continually reinvented with small little twists and additions to keep it continually fresh and inviting, particularly in an age of cheap air travel, where cities were in competition with each other for weekend tourists and so on like this. This is Kilkenny, leading up to the castle, where the public realm was has been redesigned by Grace Kelly and Michael Pike, 2 young architects, one in a national competition. So you'll see again competitions, international competition this time for Smithfield in 2000, won by McGarry and Leaney Architects, and it won the inaugural European Prize for Public Urban Space, which was awarded by the CCA in Barcelona. And this, I suppose, is a warning lesson. This was supposed to be, and was at the start, it was the lead project for the regeneration of the north side of the Liffey, the inner city. This is the opening concert by U2. In Smithfield. It was Dublin's oldest public space, a big, hard, gritty urban living room for the city. And the city has fallen, the city authorities have fallen out of love with this space, because I don't know if any of you remember seeing the Philip 10, 12 years ago, The Commitments, Alan Parker's film, and when at the start of it, there's a horse fair that goes on. The horse fair takes place once a month here on the first Sunday of every month in Smithfield. And the local authorities have been looking for all sorts of mechanisms to get rid of the horse fair. So recently, in the last year, at both ends, they have dug up parts of the hard surface and put in grass. It's absolutely incredible that in a public space of that nature, that the city would lose its vision. Which is a very important thing about public buildings like this. You know from the buildings that you went to visit how many of them had lost the vision or didn't know why things were the way they were. It's essential in the urban realm as well that visions are sustained and continually renewed. I mean, it seemed very simple in Dublin 20 years ago when the Temple Bar competition was won by Group 91, and David Mackey from MBM Barcelona, who was on the jury, said, "This competition is of historic significance because it marks the return of the acceptance by a public authority of responsibility for the public realm, by which I mean the design of streets and squares, their sequence and proportioning, and that's what the city does, that's what the public authority does, and it sets a high quality in doing that, and then the market responds to that context in the surrounding areas of the city." Those visions have to be fought for again and again and again, and it's clear now to me that it's not even every generation, but it's at least every 10 years. The boardwalk was awarded to McGarry Nianey without a competition with the city architect on negotiation. Problematical project in some ways because junkies and winos love it. So there are real issues of how we share public space, that it remains democratic and that it remains open and not commercial, but at the same time that we find ways of making space and space safe for all. And Kilkenny again. Living together, which is a real problem, because despite us being such a sociable race, we generally like to live as far away from each other as we possibly can. If we could all live in a one-off house, that's what it seems like, that's the dream. 95% of us live in our own houses, and the idea of having socially mixed neighbourhoods is anathema. But that has locked us into low density development patterns which make public infrastructure, whether it is traffic or services, economically untenable forever into the future because they're not dense enough. They're, you know, housing schemes that were built in the 1960s and 1970s with a nominal density of 4.2 people per house and 10 houses per acre, 42 people per acre. They're finding now in some of the local authorities that those houses, as the population ages, are down to 1 and 2 people. So it's 10 or 20 people per acre, and you cannot maintain even garbage collection services on that sort of basis. So there are real issues about living together. This is the timber yard in the city centre. Whether it's in small villages, like in County Limerick, this scheme by O'Donnell and Toomey, to extend the plan to town in a sensitive way, and to introduce small sort of social areas like these terrazzo seats just outside the entrance where somebody can sit in the sun and say hello to their neighbour as they go by, or whether it is at the high end in the wooden building in Temple Bar by de Blanc and Mamar, where when this scheme went on site with 19 apartments in it, people queued for 10 days outside to be first in the door with a chance to pick up what apartment they wanted. So the right sort of housing can be extremely desirable in urban conditions, or the timber yard in the heart of the old industrial city in Dublin, which also remakes the street edge, which had been utterly destroyed by the carving of an inner relief road through the inner city. So situation of Belfast is pretty familiar with itself, but architecture has the potential to respond to repair those damages.
Has the timber yard been successful? Because someone told me
there is a problem.
There's a problem.
Yeah, there is a problem, and the problem is here in this space. If you see at the end, this is the shared space. The main entrance to the street is on the right at the bottom, but you'll see there's a way out at the top.
Yeah.
That connects to the streets.
the community who've moved into the timber yard have refused the corporation or the city council. They've said to them, no bloody way are you leaving that gate open, because the kids are coming running through and they're wrecking things and everything like that. So there are real issues, and architecture can only go so far, and maybe sometimes it can aspire too much or trust too much, but it hasn't, it is not operating the way it was intended. That doesn't mean that it's wrong. You know?
I mean, you
don't always have to accept.
I didn't hear the definitive reasons why it wasn't successful, but I did hear one or two people talking recently in Dublin.
Well, there's a lack of stomach in local authorities generally, for certainly down south, for management issues. You know, a lot of people think you get a building and that's the problem solved. You know, it's like if you didn't have a car and you get your first car, you've now got mobility. Problem's over. Buildings aren't like that. You know, getting a building doesn't fix. I mean, the number of architects who will tell you that they get house extensions, you know, and the reason the house extension is commissioned is because people's marriages are breaking up, you know, and they think that the house extension will fix that. You know, it's the same with all of these buildings. The process is only beginning when the building is finished. It's not the end of it at all. Sustaining communities, particularly our poorest communities, I think is essential. We're going to need that social glue if we're ever going to get out of the fix we're in. And these are the most amazing clients of all, because they generally have no budgets. The architects are given no budgets to work with. This is Adama and Tumi's East Wall Community Centre. This is Clancy Moore's insertion into a church just off O'Connell Street in Dublin. This is St. George's and Thomas's Church by Fred Hicks, which was the very first building to win the RII Gold Medal in 1932. And it went out of use as a church in 1966, came back into use when another parish had to close with dwindling numbers in the 1990s. And it's now shared with an Indian, it's Church of Ireland, but it's shared with an Indian Orthodox Christian community. And a local brass band, and they need it because the Indian community, when they have marriages, they need a festival or feast. So it needed kitchens, and it needed a band storeroom, and it needed a crying chapel, and all sorts of things. And the pastor had 30,000 euro. And Clancy Moore took the job on, young architects, and delivered this project, which has won awards at home and been featured in magazines all over the world, on a 30,000 euro budget. Building everything as a giant piece of furniture in a listed building, and wonderful piece of work. Their very first project. They've never built anything before they took this on. In Talla in West Dublin, where the kids are feral and the horses are feral, they're running wild. The community wanted a place where they could come in and run wild indoors, instead of running wild outdoors, and maybe something, they might catch something along the way that would help them stay out of jail. So Gráinne has it Ducatez. So the materials are robust and the clients are absolutely wonderful. I mean, these are people with the biggest hearts you could imagine. And in the East Wall area of the inner city of Dublin, it's a kind of a locked in area between the railways and the Docklands. They saw the Docklands being redeveloped and all these commercial towers going up and everything like that, and there was nothing in it for them. Part of the legislation in the DDDA, Dublin Docklands Development Authority, was that there should be some social capital returned. In other words, the local communities who had always lived there should get some benefits out of it. And a women's group, a creche, an old people's community group, a soccer club, and a dance club came together. There were about nine community organisations, and you can imagine trying to them all get steered in the one direction. And anyway, O'Donnell and Toomey were commissioned for the job. But one of the things they said was, we want our own tower. You know, all these bloody towers that mean money are going up everywhere. We want a tower that, you know, we're forever singing bubbles or whatever. That's our community tower. We're proud, and we want to make our mark in the city as well. So this is paid for out of development levies,
in the Docklands, because the community itself could never afford to pay for it. Architecture and healing, something we need. I think the mark of all societies is how it looks after its most vulnerable members. And Ireland was pretty darn poor at that in the 20th century. If you just think of the scandals of the industrial schools, of the Magdalen laundries, of all the marginalised, poor and undesirable for one reason or another groups that were just shunted off into institutions and buried from public view for decades until the scandals have emerged recently. If you think of people suffering from Alzheimer's, from dementia, how do you look after? How do we look after our older relatives as they lose themselves but are still here physically with us? These are things we have to look at. So the thing I found interesting about these projects that looked at aspects of healing was that they all seemed to be focused on a notion of landscape of one sort or another. Whether it was a psychological landscape, like this installation for Venice by O'Donnell and Toomey on Letterfrack, the former industrial school at Letterfrack and its transformation, and this scary house, which was a psychological landscape to acknowledge what went on, had gone on in that institution for many years before, or whether it is a pastoral landscape like this Postinia in County Tipperary by Bates Marr, again nominated for the Mies van der Rohe, shortlisted for the Mies van der Rohe Prize for European Architecture, which is a series of hermitages where people can go just to reflect and retreat for a day or a weekend and occupy one of these cabins on the rolling hillside and escape and try to cope with the pressures of contemporary life, or whether it is Leo McLaughlin's, the McLaughlin's Alzheimer's Centre, which is a series of gardens which work on a series of rotating routeways, because one of the things about people with Alzheimer's is they tend to wander. And what this design does in a very beautiful and gentle way is it allows them to wander, but always brings them back, because the way the gardens are sequenced, they end up back at their starting point again. A place for culture, we will need that more than ever. And culture, I suppose, in Ireland starts with the spoken word, and I've included in that here this Eurocampus in South County Dublin by A2 Architects. Again, their first non-domestic building. It's a joint initiative of the Lycée Français and the Deutsche Schule in Killian. So it's the German school and the French school come together, where the students study in four languages, Irish, English, German and French. They can choose to take the Irish state exams, the baccalaureate, or exams in Germany for their entrance to university. And that's a sort of a cultural exchange that is vital for Ireland going forward, that we have these young Europeans among our number. Or the ubiquitous art centres. I like this one in Letterkenny by McGowan Architects, because although the site is very disadvantaged in lots of ways, it's pulled back from the main street, the architects gave something back in addition to the art centre, by creating a link between this lower street and the upper street, which never existed before in Letterkenny. So the building serves to connect the upper areas of the city and the lower parts. And of course, you know about this building, I don't need to say. The university in the city the relationship between town and gown has always been a fractious one, but now we need our universities more than ever. And we need them in the city, because we are now in the knowledge economy. And if these institutions don't work, we won't work going forward. And one of the things that is, it is interesting that it was Irish architects here, Grafton Architects, with this Università Luigi Bocconi in Milan, which won the World Building of the Year in 2008. They made their international breakthrough on this building by being invited to an international, limited international competition, which they won. But one of the things that is interesting about university buildings now is the desire from the universities to make literal connections with the city around them, to become integrated rather than being ivory towers, to becoming part of it. And it looks, when a Cork is one example, where it's the new Gateway building,
It's seen in the university as the stimulus for creativity, creativity that is often absent in some of the academic departments. The university believes it will be spurred by that. It's also seen as the meeting place between the citizen of the city of Cork, who can come to see an exhibition here, which will be drawn from the university's collection, or maybe, as it is now, a visiting exhibition on Joseph Albers, and also where academics, scientists, and particularly people who are not in the humanities, can have their eyes opened to the creative arts. A place of the imagination. One of the things that's interesting about these buildings too is they tend to use a single material. They tend to use unbroken surfaces. They tend to be monolithic in a way, and that has a curious effect. It doesn't matter whether the material is as simple as a brick or those sheets of timber. It gives them a kind of a metaphysical quality, a sort of a sense of timelessness that seems completely appropriate for university. This is the brick surface at Cork Institute of Technology by de Blocco and Mar, which could have been and was, it was a prefab university. It's more than a red brick now. I mean, it really is an institution. You know, you just know how the values of that university have been changed through the commissioning of that piece of architecture. How anybody who goes through there thinks differently about themselves and will do different things as a result of that. And in Bocconi, where the, again, a single material, the university bought the mountain so that it could guarantee that it would have the stone to clad the building. They just went out and bought, it's the biggest private university. This is a private university, private business university. It benchmarks itself against Harvard as a business university. And they went out and bought the building. But the Aula Maxima, you know, is straining to come out of the ground, to come out of the university and into the city. It's opening up that big window onto the city between itself. The pavement here, university paved out to here, and that pavement runs right through, so the street is continuous the whole way from the outside to the inside of the university. Very complex project. The aula has to seat 1,000 people, and the rest of the building is 1,000 individual offices for 1,000 professors. Extraordinary project. And this is in the undercroft of the aula, with the street or the city outside. And finally, we can't forget Architecture's Laboratory, which is the private house. And although we were building at one stage 5 or 6 years ago, we were building something like 30,000 individual houses on the island of Ireland a year. Staggering number. Almost none of them were designed by architects. Almost none of them. And I did some research 6-7 years ago, which showed that of award-winning private houses, almost none of them were designed for anyone other than the architect themselves, their family, or a friend they already knew. It was really extraordinary kind of conclusion. Unless you were an architect, had an architect in the family, or your best pal was an architect, you were never, ever going to get an award-winning house. Simple as that. Why that was, who wasn't talking to who, I don't know, but it's a fact. But Architecture's Laboratory, it's where the profession renews itself. It's where young architects make their name and get the chance to do the next thing. So we can't ever forget that either as a core value. This is Peter Cody's house in County Kilkenny. Maybe the youngest of the architects in the lot, Taka, Keane Deegan and Alice Clancy. And this is a house for Alice's, well, the old house, the main house, was converted for Alice's parents, and at the end of the mews, there was a house for Alice's sister and her husband and their new baby. So, same old story. But they just made an experiment on materials. It was just one idea. The old house, the original house at the front of the long site, traditional site with street in the front, mews lane at the back, had a Flemish bond brickwork. And they wanted to make some sort of mental connection between the old house and the new house. And as you know, a Flemish bond wall is a stretcher, a header, a stretcher, a header. Okay? So on the street side, they just took out all the stretchers of what will be a Flemish bond. And all that's left are the headers projecting. And it's kind of like, you know, it's like a hedgehog or a porcupine. It has that kind of, on a fairly ropey mews lane, It has that kind of hard protective shell. But on the garden side, facing the mother's house, they took out all the stretch, all the headers, and left all the stretchers, and this is what you get. And it's really beautiful. They put nightclads in it, birds are in it, little plants are growing in it. Up on the ones on the beside the window glass continues behind it, and you're looking out through this fretwork of the brickwork. It's really beautiful. It's just a simple idea of a Flemish bond on the parents' house and how you can make some connection, and you get something completely new out of it. And don't anybody tell you that this costs more than ordinary brickwork. You know, it's not a matter of cost. Dominic Stevens. Another experimenter, an architect. This is a house for the architect himself and his family in County Leitrim. He decided to move from Dublin about 10, 12 years ago, to move from Dublin to Leitrim and to become a part-time farmer and a part-time architect. And he would build his house himself, which he did. This part of it is timber frame. But it was an experimental house. He would look at materials that you were not allowed to use in Ireland. But he would prove that they could be used and they were durable. So the cladding here is timber off packing pallets, transport pallets. It'll last 10 years, needs to be replaced every 10 years. He's prepared to do that because he's a handyman and a farmer now and everything like that. And so that was that's one of the forms of construction. On the back of the house, he used straw bales, which his neighbours provided, and he plastered them. And so it's the sort of experiment, it doesn't comply with the building regulations, but this is really experimental architecture. This is architecture's laboratory. We can all learn from this. And as you know, he has gone on to do things in the last year. He has designed a house that can be built for €25,000, and he has put those plans for free on the web so that anybody can, and he has built the house for himself and lives in it now, and he has shown pictures of it, and he has issued the construction kit, the full purchase list of what you have to do, and anyone can have it, and it's free. So it's out there. And finally, I'll close with another house by Peter Cody, of Boyd Cody, for himself. And this is a kind of an architect's puzzle. He had always dreamed of building a house that had different spaces in it, different rooms in it, but was one space, a house that had no doors. Now, it's just for him. He lives alone, so he can kind of get away with it. But it's very clever. I mean, the house steps down the hill, as you can see, and there are actually five parts to the house. So there's one, two, three, four, five. And you have to imagine that they're slid. So where there's a gap here on the far side, the one is slid out. So this is 1 meter wide, and you just get the entrance door on it. And you get the toilet on the far side, 1 meter wide, all the toilet thing. The gap is 2 meters wide, and that provides the kitchen. What you see then, the next building there is the bedroom, 3 meters wide. The next gap on the far side is the dining room, which is 4 meters wide, and the final room is the living room, which is 5 meters wide. And as the rooms get wider, you can see that it steps down the hill, but the ceiling remains the same height. So it's a wonderful Euclidean kind of geometric puzzle. If you imagine that it was on sliders and you could push the two sides in, the plan is a double square. I mean, it's a mathematical pleasure to just think about. The most beautiful plan in Irish architecture that I've ever seen. That's it. Values, values, values. Thank you.